Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. A little late, but better than never. We had some technical issues, and we are going to be discussing last night's Money in the Bank at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room, and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. First off, folks, I hope you're all going to have a very, very happy 4th of July. Let's lead it off with this.
He's got the red, white, blue, blind, hound, farm. Never find that tear on his left arm. Print a little more in the soul for a tag. In the back it says, even
so thank you for taking a little portion of your 4th of July weekend to join us here. Folks, Money in the Bank. Holy mackerel. There were some surprises, weren't there? There were some interesting occurrences, weren't there? And to be honest, there were a couple of really good matches. We can't argue that. But I'm going to start first with one of the things that attracted a lot of people's attention, and that was that little vignette that happened about halfway through the show, which featured someone walking, and you saw a cross, an Olympic gold medal, and you saw various items. And a lot of people instantly said, Bray Wyatt has something to do with Bray Wyatt. That's going to be Edge. That's Edge's vignette. I'm pretty confident that the idea behind it is that we're showing other Hall of Famers and their gimmicks or their logos or things that were associated with them. Kurt Angle's a gold medal, The Undertaker's the cross. I think we saw a license plate that said Latino Heat. So I think that's going to be Edge. No word that Bray Wyatt's coming back. So now with that out of the way, we started this with the women's Money in the Bank ladder match. And folks, I got to tell you, the internet today is full of people applauding not only the ladder match, but the ultimate winner of the ladder match, which is Liv Morgan. And I was very surprised by this, because Liv Morgan has certainly not been treated in a manner by the WWE as of late, except for her one victory over Alexa Bliss in what I still say is one of the worst women's matches I've ever seen on the television show. And certainly Lacey Evans, just having been introduced, would have seemed like the proper choice. But I think the WWE has realized something, and that is that Liv Morgan is over with the crowd. And I've often said on this show, you don't have to be the world's greatest wrestler. If you can get over with the crowd, then certainly that's probably more important than how good you are in the ring, especially if you're at least adequate in the ring. So I think the WWE probably took a good look at this and said, well, who's the most popular person here? It's certainly not going to be anybody other than Liv Morgan. Alexa Bliss would probably be second, but her recent gimmicks and the way she's been conducting herself is not helping her. And Becky could fight, and nobody's going to care one way or the other if it's for a belt or if it's not. If it's for a championship, apparently they just figure they're going to fight forever, and that'll be fine. They wanted to continue Becky Lynch's downward spiral. They're doing that. But I have to say, I really was a little bit surprised at Liv Morgan, and I'm not going to lie to you. I don't like it. You see, because there's a difference when you say the crowd is into someone because they have a great personality, they're great on the mic, they cut great promos, and they're not good wrestlers, but that's okay because they can talk a great match, and their gimmick is so strong that it doesn't really matter if they're super in the ring. It matters that all the fans are behind them because their gimmick is so great. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. Liv Morgan is not good on the mic. She's barely adequate in the ring. So the only thing I can think of why fans are behind her is A, she's the underdog, and B, the male population thinks she's hot. That's it. If you ran down the list of talent in the women's division based upon their actual ability, Liv Morgan would not rank high. If you ran down the talent based upon their mic skills, Liv Morgan would not rank high. If you ran down the women's division based upon their ability to really sell a fight, Liv Morgan would not rank high. If you based it on their looks, Liv Morgan would rank high. If you based it upon crowd response, I guess Liv Morgan would rank fairly high. Now, I could make an argument that Alexa Bliss would rank just as high in those categories, and she's a better wrestler, and she's better on the mic. But I guess they figured been there, done that. It was a good ladder match. I'm not super happy with the winner, and we'll get to what happened later after that. But, Mike, this was one of those things that it really shocked me. I did not think Liv Morgan had a chance in this match.
Right. I didn't think so either, and that's the deal. I mean, look, there are different ways they could play this. I mean, look, you know, you have several women that one shot would put the other woman out, right? I mean, for God's sakes, you could have had Lacey Evans hit everybody with the women's right, have her go up into the air and get the briefcase and be done with it, right? Knock mm-hmm. everybody out and be done with it. You know, that's what you could have had done. I agree with you. It's surprising me that they did this, just like what happened in the other ladder match. But we'll get around to that later. It's surprising me that they did this. But I mean, look, and she's the underdog, and I mean, this could be a good deal because think about it. I mean, what did we say about Big E when he was the champion, right? He was a big, strong guy, but basically he was, I don't want to say a weak champion, but he was sort of a strong underdog champion, right? Because you didn't expect him to win all the time, right? They could do the same thing with Liv Morgan.
Yeah, look, you know, and Derek is saying it's nice sometimes when they surprise you, and I agree. It's nice that, you know, they swerve you and you say the person we most thought was going to win isn't going to win. I just want the person, and I'm going to contradict myself in a minute here and show you how there is a difference. What does the future hold for Liv Morgan? Do you want her to be the champion? Do you honestly think that Liv Morgan will represent the women's division and put on really good, strong matches for that title? Or do you think that she's a more of a momentary flash in the pan that the fans are taking to because of her appearance and her, underdog status? Because I don't see Liv Morgan having great matches. Liv Morgan tried to have a match with Alexa Bliss, and it was horrible. Horrible. Before Liv Morgan ever became Woman's Champion or a Money in the Bank briefcase holder, we said this is unacceptable to have this bad of a match. Now you're going to have those bad of matches when you're champion? Is there any real build-up to Ronda Rousey's going to face Liv Morgan when Ronda's healthy and Ronda's not going to win? Liv Morgan's going to win? It feels very much like a placeholder. When you do something just to do it, when you do something just to say, okay, well, they'll never suspect this, so, but it's not going to lead to anything. It's not leading to any anticipation of, oh, is this going to be great when she has the rematches? And that'll be a hard-fought battle for Ronda Rousey. No, it won't. Liv Morgan's been beaten by almost everyone. And while the same could be said of Big E, there was a big difference, and that is Big E could deliver in that ring times 10. I don't see Liv Morgan as being able to do that. I'm sorry. I just don't. So anyway, let's move on to the second match of the night, which, of course, was Austin Theory defending his U.S. championship against Bobby Lashley. Now, let me say this. Just as many people were out there saying, what a wonderful, wonderful thing. Liv Morgan's a champion. Yay, it's wonderful. It's about time. Are losing their mind because Austin Theory did something a little later on that we'll talk about. Here's a newsflash for you. The best match of Bobby Lashley's career in the WWE came last night. You think that's an accident? Do you think that Bobby Lashley just said, I'm going to try really, really hard tonight to put on a much better match than I've ever put on before? Or do you think a lot of that's who his opponent is? Do you think that's who's supplying the movement, who's supplying that kind of pace and then slowing it down to his pace and selling the power? Did you see Austin Theory last night? Austin Theory last night did exactly to the T what we have said on this show forever needs to happen. I can't stand toe-to-toe with Bobby Lashley. Now, we're not talking about a guy that looks like Adam Cole. We're talking about a guy that if you saw him on the street, you'd be like, that's a big dude, man. That is a ripped, big, freaking dude. He'd probably whoop your ass, right? Now, next to Bobby Lashley, he don't look that big, but what did Austin Theory do? Stand toe-to-toe with Bobby Lashley? No. Did he outpower Bobby Lashley? No. He used wrestling psychology and said, well, if he gets a hold of me, I'm done. I got to hit and run and hit and run and try to wear him down and cheat and hit and run and hit and run. It was Bobby Lashley's best performance in a WWE ring. And he can thank Austin Theory for that. Period. So I don't know why people are hating on him. You wanted a guy that's going to be your future, you got a guy that's going to be your future. And he can put on really, really good matches. And we now know he can get in there with a guy who's fast and agile and put on good matches, or he can get in there with a guy who's relatively not agile and not very fast and put on good matches. He understands the need to go where his opponent is. Oh, he's bigger than me and he's more supposed to be more powerful? Fine, I'll sell that. Oh, he's supposed to be faster than me? Fine, I'll sell that. He's supposed to be a better wrestler? Oh, fine, I'll sell that. He understands that that's a major factor in professional wrestling. He's one of the few guys coming up that really, really get it. Okay, he loses. I did not expect him to lose, but then again, I did not expect him to enter Money in the Bank. So now we know why he lost. Bobby Lashley is champion. The championship will probably help him because Bobby Lashley. And by the way, I want to say this. The WWE should bottle that crowd last night. That crowd was unbelievable. That crowd should give themselves a round of applause. That crowd was going nuts for things that most crowds would have been going for popcorn. That crowd was red hot. Red hot. They were flipping for Bobby Lashley. He wasn't doing much. Goes to show you how good of a heel Austin Theory's become. So Bobby Lashley wins, Mike. I was surprised, but then later on we figured out, obviously, why that title switch came.
Right, I'll get to how I feel about the Austin Theory thing later on. But is there any wonder why Brock Lesnar, remember when Brock Lesnar came out there, beat up on everybody, but didn't didn't lay a hand on Austin Theory. In fact, put his cowboy hat on him. Remember that?
Yep, sure do.
You know,
absolutely.
So that's just, when he did that, we all said that meant something. That was basically like Brock Lesnar passing the torch. Right?
There's no doubt that Brock Lesnar, who worked with him in Hell in a Cell, too, by the way, and he made Brock look extraordinarily good. Brock Lesnar likes Theory. I know for a fact he does. He's stated he likes Theory. He thinks Theory is a good worker and respectful backstage, and he likes him. Brock Lesnar doesn't work with just anyone. So if Brock Lesnar agrees to work with you, oh, he might have been in Hell in a Cell with him and said, oh, I'll give him one F5, but I'm not working with him. No, he worked with him for 5 minutes. He wouldn't work with Jinder Mahal for 5 minutes. So I'll go to show you. So, I mean, listen, okay, Bobby Lashley's the U.S. champion. Good. You know, I think that'll help Lashley. And considering where Austin Theory is going with this, well, I think this helps Austin Theory too, obviously. We then get to Bianca Belair versus Carmella. And again, the crowd was really hot for this. And I mean, listen, this is great. If you have a crowd that's going to pop for this, Carmella wasn't even supposed to be there. It's be Rhea Ripley. And look, Carmella did her best. Obviously, Bianca Belair sold her stuff for a while, but in the end, it's a 7-minute match. In the end, it was a 7-minute victory for Bianca Belair. Now, obviously, what happens after the match probably is more important than what happened during the match, and I'll tell you why. Getting beaten up after the match indicates to me this feud's not over. And if this feud's not over, that indicates to me that Rhea Ripley's going to be out longer than they thought. Otherwise, they'd just bring Rhea Ripley back in a week or so, and they'd start that all over again. It doesn't look like that's going to happen. So we're probably going to see another Carmella-Bianca Belair match at some point. I was really waiting to see if Bayley might come out or something else might happen, but no. Nothing. We didn't see her all night. There was no surprise underneath that. So, I mean, this one was pretty predictable. It was decent, Mike. It wasn't a bad match, but I don't, you know, the Las Vegas crowd seemed to be thrilled with it. I particularly was not.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. You know, it was an all right match and all that stuff. And again, that crowd, it didn't matter what it was. That crowd, it reminded me a whole lot of the crowds they seem to get a lot of the times when they go to the UK.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, that crowd really, really should give themselves a hand, because this pay-per-view, I don't think would have been as fun to watch without that crowd. The crowd really getting behind people and really cheering people on made a huge difference. Huge difference. I didn't expect anything close to that for Theory versus Bobby Lashley. I figured they look at Theory as a guy, they're like, well, he's a bad guy, but he's not too bad, and some of us like him, so it's all right. And Bobby Lashley's kind of boring, man. We'll watch. No, they were red hot. You would have thought it was Hulk Hogan versus Randy Savage. I was like, Jesus, where's those crowds been? So good for them. Good for the Vegas crowd. You need to go back there more often. My God. Tremendous, tremendous crowd last night. So Bianca Belair does, you know, her usual decent job. Carmella does her usual decent job. But I don't think anybody's interested in this feud. At least I'm not. We then get to the Usos versus the Street Profits. And once again, I think you could say it's pretty obvious that the Street Profits weren't going to win. But this match, once again, embodies what professional wrestling is supposed to be. There was a definite psychological plan for this match. And it was pulled off perfectly, to the point where probably 5-6 minutes into the match, I said, I give up on my prediction. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe they are going to let them. because everything they normally do before somebody else wins the match, they didn't do. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is looking like the Street Profits are going to win. The way they're booking this match, the comeback's going to be Street Profits, and it's, I don't see how they're going to get around it. And even the ending, which a lot of people didn't like, I love the ending. I love the ending. We could talk about this match for the whole show, by the way, because both of these teams really lit it up. Give credit to the Street Profits. When they're motivated correctly, they can be really, really, really good, and they were really, really, really good. The Usos are always good. Always good. They really, really turned it on last night. There were parts of this match that were spectacular. This is, in my opinion, best match of the night. Fantastic match. And then to have the ending be what it was, where we see from our vantage point, okay, well, Montez Ford got pinned. Usos pulled it out. And then Ford, doing an excellent job, by the way, not a good job, an excellent job. He didn't look like he was kidding. He didn't look like, oh, man, I got ripped off, man. My shoulder was up. No, he's really trying to tell the referee, dude, my shoulder is up. Go look at the tape, restart the match. That's not, my shoulder was up. I purposely put my shoulder up, and you didn't see it. Just led to the, we're going to get a rematch out of this, and I'm up for it. This could be a really good feud. You know, the Usos had a really good feud with the New Day, a really, really good feud with the New Day. They could have a really, really good feud with the Street Profits, but once again, what does that tell you? It tells me that the Usos are, if not the best tag team in the WWE, certainly one of the best two. Because they get that ring psychology. They get it. There was things in that match last night that had to be perfectly timed. I mean really perfectly timed, or it would look cheesy, or it would look wrong, or it would look fake. And never did it look cheesy, wrong, or fake, because the timing was perfect. These guys went out and put on probably as good a match as you're going to put on. I don't know if you can top it, because I didn't see anything wrong. And I'm clearly watching. When I see a match that good, I say, okay, let me see if any little thing is wrong with it, or if they screw up a part, or they cut out something because somebody forgot, or something doesn't look good. No, everything looked great. I'm watching it saying, this is why I love professional wrestling. Because when you do it at that level and you do it correctly, it's fantastic. And guess what? I don't know what the Usos think about, you know, the economy. I don't know what the Usos think about Roe v. Wade. I don't know what the Usos think about, you know, whatever. And I don't need to. Likewise, the Street Profits, because they've shut their mouths. So I'm totally into this match, and I'm being dead honest. Mike, there was a couple of times when I said, I don't know if it's the best thing for the business, but I think the Street Profits are going to win. So they bluffed me out here to a certain extent. That doesn't happen too much. I thought the Usos would win, but I don't know. There were moments in that match when I was rethinking it.
I think so, too, and that's the deal. I mean, look, we praise those that series of matches between the New Day and the Usos. I mean, we say the New Day at that time were probably the hottest tag team all told, all around, not just in the ring, but in promotions and everything. I mean, everything they touched turned to gold, you know, from the unicorn horns to the ice cream bars to the pancakes to everything, you know, outside of the ring. And, of course, they were and have been and are very excellent workers, even without Big E. I mean, look, when they brought out those tights for Drew McIntyre and called him Big D, I thought that was hilarious, you know, and I thought it worked. But that's the New Day, you know, and that's the New Day, and that's the thing. And I guarantee you, after this, whatever happens after this feud, if they win the titles, if not, I'd like to see a match between the Street Profits and Kofi and Xavier.
Yeah, and you probably will at some point, but I want everybody to also remember one thing that was real important about this match and the thing that stuck in my mind. As I'm watching it, I'm hearing a lot of fans rooting for the Usos, number one. And number two, this match was booked in a way that the Usos didn't cheat very much. Really didn't cheat at all. I mean, you could say breaking up a pin is cheating, but not really. I mean, the Street Profits did it too. There wasn't a lot of blatant cheating or whatever. And it makes me think that they really, really are beginning this push toward a possibility of this team flipping after SummerSlam, of the whole entire bloodline possibly flipping after SummerSlam. It's very possible. It's very possible. But, yeah, I mean, I can't praise the match enough. This was one of the best matches this year on a pay-per-view, a WWE pay-per-view. There's no question in my mind. Both teams did an excellent job. I've heard a lot of people say, Montez Ford needs to be a solo guy. He's so good, and he's packed on some muscle. You notice they've been mentioning that, which is a good thing because he's a little underweight. He looks a little better now. But I'm not sure about that. They work so well as a tag team. It would be like saying, well, Xavier Woods should go out on his own. Well, yeah, I mean, you can have your solo matches now and then, but I don't know, man. I think they need to stay as a team. I'm not sure I'm ready for a Montez Ford solo push just yet. He is great in the ring, and he is probably better than his tag team partner, Angelo Dawkins, but I think together they're better, even if they do solo matches. So if they pull the New Day thing, that's fine. If they say, well, we're going to go on and even possibly challenge for solo titles, but we're still partners, that's okay. But if you're going to break them up or trying to do a one turns on the other, I would highly suggest you don't do that. So I think you're going to lose some magic. Ronda Rousey takes on Natalia. And I was happy to say this. For all the people, including myself, who's given Ronda Rousey some shit over the years, and by the way, deserve it, deservedly so. You can stop doing it now. She's actually become a professional wrestler. She was great with Shotzi. She was great with Raquel Rodriguez. And she was great last night with Natty. She sold everything Natty did. It looked good. I never once thought Natty was going to win. But then again, of course I didn't. And I didn't know what was coming up. And she did a really good job of selling her knee, because I'm telling you that for a minute I said, I wonder if she really hurt her knee. Because sort of right after that came the end of the match. And I'm like, did they call for the end early? Because Natty didn't even get the sharpshooter on her. I thought there was going to be a spot where Natty gets the sharpshooter on her, because she kept saying, I'm going to be the first one to make her tap out. And I said, well, Natty's going to get the sharpshooter on her at some point, and she's not going to tap out. But Natty's going to get that sharpshooter on her. She didn't. And my first thought was, maybe Ronda really injured her knee. She's had some surgeries on those knees. And maybe they had to call for the end early. But obviously, it's not the case. So now I have to give the WWE even more credit, because it was a brilliant idea not to have Ronda Rousey escape the sharpshooter. Because then you still have that sharpshooter looking like, well, no, Natty didn't submit her with it. She didn't get it on her. If she got it on her, she might have submitted her with it. Excellent, excellent idea. Now, again, I'm going to sing the WWE's praise. For all you people who say I'm always downer on WWE, I'm not a downer today. Liv Morgan gets in that ring, cashes in that Money in the Bank. The fans are going nuts, and right away Ronda pops up like Hulk Hogan and puts her in that leg lock, and the fans were like, fuck, she's going to tap out. She's going to lose her chance right now. Those fans truly believed, I believed, Ronda Rousey was tapping her out. And I was just about to say, boy, tomorrow on the show, I'm going to say, what a freaking waste of a Money in the Bank match, right? And what does she do? Liv Morgan kicks her in that knee. Ronda stumbles backward. She rolls her up for the three count, and she's the new champion. What a great, great booking. With one exception. Liv Morgan is not a good champion. I know there are people who disagree with me. I know a lot of Liv Morgan fans. But I'm just going to tell you that you're not going to see great matches out of Liv Morgan, because I've not seen one yet. I've seen disastrous ones. I saw one just last week with Alexa Bliss, who normally is really good. I've seen her miss spots. I've seen her totally botch up matches recently. Now, if you want to argue, well, at least we now have a champion that every single match she could lose, you're absolutely correct. If Natty fights her, I don't know. Maybe Natty will win. But everything about this screams at the top of its lungs, Charlotte's coming back to tap her out and fight Ronda. Everything about that screams transitional champion. You get to live your dream, and then you get to have your dreams crushed by that big heel, and Ronda gets to avenge your loss. Everything about this gimmick screams that to me. I don't see Liv Morgan being elevated to all of a sudden, I'm so tough I can beat Becky Lynch. I'm so tough I can beat Ronda Rousey. I'm so tough I can beat Charlotte Flair. I'm so tough I can beat Asuka. I do not see that. I see a transitional champion. Now, will they let her hold it till SummerSlam? Yeah, probably. But I don't think much past that, Mike. So I'm not sure this is the best choice in the world. But the execution of it and the way they did it was flawless.
And this is how much Ronda Rousey has improved. Go back and watch her as she's walking away from the ring. She is still selling that knee injury as she's going. That's a true professional wrestler. And look, What have we said about Liv Morgan, especially when she was in the Riot Squad? We said she was probably the third best of them, and that includes Sarah Logan. Sarah Logan, in my mind, would have been, if she was still there, would have been a better choice, because I think she's a better wrestler. She's better on the mic.
Yep.
She's better, you know, in the ring.
Yep.
She's better, you know, and that's the thing. But Sarah Logan's not there, and we've talked about how that was a mistake letting her go, but that's neither here nor there. You know, I agree with you. And Ronda's improvement started with Charlotte.
It did, yes, absolutely. So for the people who are down on Charlotte and stuff, I know Ronda and Charlotte are close friends. I think maybe Charlotte helped coach Ronda a little bit because what was happening with Ronda is she was trying to be such a badass that she was coming off a heel when she's a face. She wasn't letting anybody really get over on her. She wasn't acting like things hurt that should hurt. And fans were just like, okay, screw you. We get it. You're Superwoman. We don't like it. And Ronda backed off that a lot. And last night, by hugging Liv Morgan, I think Ronda endeared herself to a lot of fans and said, okay, she took it like a woman. Now, she could bitch and yell and say, oh, well, that's great. I get cashed in when, you know, my knee is shot. But all this is doing, remember when we say branches on the tree, what happened here? She never got put in the sharpshooter. Glee Natty cost her the belt. This is going to lead, I'm assuming, to a submission match. Your sharpshooter versus my whatever. Arm lock. Maybe a SummerSlam, maybe before it. But that's what it's going to lead to. In the meantime, you're probably going to see Liv Morgan fend off some challenges from some lesser opponents like Shotzi and Xia Li and stuff like that. Probably leading up to either, if it's going to be a heel, it's going to be Charlotte coming back. You can see that coming. Probably where we're heading for that. Becky Lynch, maybe, I don't know. We'll see what happens and where people stay in their various federations, because I'm hearing there's going to be some switching, like soon, really soon. So we'll see what happens with that. But the execution of that was really good. I'm not thrilled about Liv Morgan being the champion because I see her being very inconsistent. Her matches with Becky Lynch, remember when they had those big feuds, were not very good. Her match with Alexa Bliss was not very good. And I don't want to see our women's championship represented in a way that people are like, oh, look at that, so terrible, that's so phony. I don't want to see that. Because even if Ronda's not too good, people can't say that about Ronda. They're like, well, it's not really phony. She can do that shit for real. You know what I mean? So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. I think, however, Ronda went a long way last night to solidifying herself as a professional wrestler and not a UFC fighter cosplaying as a professional wrestler. I think that transition, I'm willing to say that transition is complete now. I consider Ronda Rousey a professional wrestler. So then we get to the men's Money in the Bank. And here's the people I feel sorry for. There's really only one I feel sorry for. I feel sorry for Madcap Moss. Because with the star power that was out there, he was the least popular, and it showed. He got to do high spots, and the fans, who were great last night, really didn't pop for him. I guess it's because they knew he wasn't winning. Now, this crowd was angry when Adam Pearce interjected Theory into this match. Because I think the crowd rightfully said, if he's in it, he's winning it. Now we know why he lost the U.S. title. He's winning this whole thing. I said it. But to the WWE's credit, they did a very good job with this match. And there were times in this match when I was 100% convinced that Riddle was winning this. There were times in this match where I was 100% convinced that Seth Rollins was winning it. And there was even a time or two when I said, it is going to be Sami Zayn. I was right. They're going to pull that. So they did a really good job here of confusing it. And I thought to myself, well, if Theory doesn't win, he doesn't win. It's not like he has to take a loss again or anything. He just didn't climb the ladder. A lot of people said Omos sucked in this match. Well, what do you want Omos to do? You want him to do Hurricanranas off a ladder? He's not going to do it. That's not what he does. I thought Omos was fine. He threw people around. He used his power and his size, and that's what he's supposed to do. And he got put through the table, which was awesome. Sami Zayn was awesome in this match, taking every single sneaky opportunity to try to run up that ladder. Unbelievably, I think the stars of this match, to some extent, was Sheamus and McIntyre. Sheamus and McIntyre, really, I mean, they just work so well together. I don't know whether to make them a tag team or keep them enemies. But I know this, if they weren't so needed as solo performers, I'm totally into a Sheamus and Drew McIntyre tag team. I would be totally into that tag team. They definitely have chemistry, whether they're friends or whether they're enemies, there is a natural chemistry there. And Sheamus was very good last night. Drew McIntyre was very good last night. Both of those guys really stepped up to the plate. Sheamus stepping up at like 45 years old to the plate with injuries. And looked phenomenal. Yeah, I remember when Sheamus first came in the Federation, there were people scoffing at it, saying, stupid, it's dumb, he can't wrestle. What do you think now? I mean, this guy's a real deal. He's the embodiment of what professional wrestling's kind of supposed to be. And he's done an excellent job. And McIntyre's had his hot and cold, but it looks like McIntyre's getting back into the hot, which is good. Now, Riddle had some fantastic moments in this match. Even Madcap had some fantastic moments. Sami Zayn did exactly what he's supposed to do. Theory did exactly what he's supposed to do. I know there's people out there that don't like Theory, but every single time I see this guy work, the first thing that comes into my mind is he's going to be big. he is going to be a superstar for a long time in this federation. He is not going to be a fly-by-night guy. He's not going to be a guy that's popular or heads main events for 5 months and then he gets thrown under the bus. He is going to be here a long time. You're going to remember his name. He is extremely good at what he does, extremely good. And he makes his opponents look better, and that's rare. That's very rare. So this match, yeah, it was great. Everybody, I thought everybody did an excellent job. I had no qualms with what Almost did. What do you want him to do? Like I said, what do you want him to do? Everybody else was fantastic with their – everybody took a chance. Everybody took a risky move here or there. Even Almost going through the table. I mean, he don't go through many tables. So everybody put it all out on the line. Everybody left it on in the ring. And at the end, yes, it came down to Riddle and Theory, and it looked to me like Theory was going to probably fall short again and Riddle was going to grab it. But that's not what happened. Theory grabbed the briefcase. Theory is your Money in the Bank ladder winner, and a lot of the wrestling universe seems to be upset about this, and I don't know why. You're saying, well, it's unrealistic. He's going to beat Brock Lesnar, or he's going to pin Roman Reigns. Well, is it unrealistic that Liv Morgan took it from Ronda Rousey? I don't know why you think that's unrealistic. This guy, I'm sorry. If you don't like him, he's doing his job. But if you're telling me he's not good in the ring, then you're not watching. Or you just don't understand what good is. Because he's very, very good. He's way, way better than even I thought he was. And he's 20-some-odd years old. He's only going to get better, barring injuries. This is probably the top blue-chip guy that the WWE has had in their possession in a very long time. In a very long time. And they know it. They're not stupid. They know it. Now, do I think Theory's going to cash in successfully? Well, we'll get to that in a minute after we discuss this match. But, Mike, I don't know why anybody's upset about Theory. I thought this was, I know he didn't have to qualify to get in, but that's the gimmick that Vince McMahon favors him. So I thought it was fine.
All right, and there's still another. There's still branches on that tree, you know. I mean, Vince McMahon favors him. Well, why wouldn't he favor his own son, you know? That branch is still there on the tree, right? So, but when I found out that Riddle's hometown is, guess what? Las Vegas. All right.
Ain't no wonder they were popping. Yeah.
He did. We know how the WWE likes to have people lose in their hometowns, right? Well,
yep.
The favoring thing is a branch on a tree. But again, I mean, you'd have branches on a tree if you would have had Riddle pull that thing down. We know what the branches are on that tree, but we have branches on that tree because you know, at some point, Randy Orton's coming back. You know that, right? You know
sure.
that. So those are the branches on the tree. And like you said, look, what's his name? Well, I'd like to see. Drew McIntyre as a face, but I'd like to see Drew possibly join Sheamus's group. You know, that would be a hell of a group there. Now, as far as some of the other people, I like the flying Glasgow kiss that he gave to what's his name? To the big guy there. And McIntyre bench pressing that ladder.
Yep. There were some nice spots in that match. Even Butch getting involved was pretty funny. I agree with you, though. If McIntyre would join that group, that's a pretty tough group. right now you got Sheamus and a little guy who don't win much, and of course a guy who hasn't wrestled much after breaking Big E's neck. You add Drew McIntyre to that group, and automatically that's a, okay, well, now that's a serious group. That's a group that's not going to easily be beaten. So, yeah, I agree with you. I just think they need McIntyre so badly as a solo guy because they don't have a lot of faces that they wouldn't want to make that – they wouldn't want to do it. But you're right about the branches on the tree, but think about it. You had a WWE Money in the Bank ladder match where there was a lot of branches with different people. Now, I can't think of a branch on the tree for Sheamus, and I can't really think of a branch on the tree for even Drew, nor Madcap. But you could argue that if a giant has a Money in the Bank briefcase, everyone's in trouble. And you cannot argue that almost staring Brock Lesnar in the face wouldn't be fun. So there's some branches on that tree. Sami Zayn, there was a lot of branches on that tree. He said he's going to hold on to it for a year, but Sami Zayn's a sneak thief. Sami Zayn could cash it in the first earliest opportunity. You never know what Sami Zayn's going to do, and you never know what it's going to lead to. So certainly there were branches on the tree if Sami won it. We all know what the branches on the tree were if Riddle won it. That, okay, I can't challenge for the belt anymore, but I certainly can still win it. I got the Money in the Bank briefcase. Seth Rollins, there's still branches on that tree. Well, who knows him better? Look at the cash-in history. So there was branches on that tree. And now with theory, there's branches on the tree. Because there's a lot of things that could happen. You could potentially see Theory be the youngest champion in history. You could potentially see some kind of splitting of the belt. You could potentially see him not cashing in successfully, having Vince McMahon throw him to the curb saying, you're not the person I thought you were, you're garbage, and having him turn face to try to prove to McMahon and be a thorn in McMahon's side. All of those things could happen. So there's a lot of branches on these trees. And for the first time in a while, I'm looking at things saying, well, I'm a little bit optimistic. We're looking down the barrel of some decent matches. I don't think we're looking down the barrel of very good matches with Liv Morgan. But we're going to be looking down the barrel of some good matches with Theory. I think having Lashley as champion could be interesting. Let's see who steps up to challenge him. Think we're going to see more Usos and the Street Profits, and I'm down for that for sure. I think we might see a submission match between Ronda Rousey and Natty, and I'm up for that. So there's a lot of things going on. A lot of things going on. I think it's honestly, if there was a lot of people who wrote me last night and said, the pay-per-view's average. I think the pay-per-view was way above average, way above it, not just from a wrestling perspective, from an angle perspective where you say, well, now I can see some things possibly taking place that I'm interested in. The WWE made some really interesting moves, and they made some very interesting decisions, and they're starting to tell some very interesting stories. I'm starting to see pieces falling together here in this puzzle, and that's a good thing. So before we get on to some of the other show, because we got some things to discuss, I'm going to go ahead and rate this show. I don't think it was a perfect show. There was a couple of things I did not care for. One is I just don't see Liv Morgan being the champion. I think you should have had her hang on to that briefcase. Because she would have benefited so much more by having some promo time and some, you know, time of, oh, she's going to cash in now? Oh, no. Is she going to cash in now? No. She would have been a central focus for a while, as opposed to what I think is a transitional champion until Charlotte Flair comes back or whoever. So I disagree with that. Aside from that, I think this pay-per-view was as close to as great as it could possibly be. And I can't even be too mad at Liv Morgan because the fans love her. They're willing to excuse that she can't wrestle. Or barely can. What can I do? I'm giving this an A, a flat A. I won't give it an A+, but I'll give it an A, Mike. I thought they did an outstanding job last night.
No, I give it an I give it an A minus because I still think that Riddle should have won, but I can't argue with the logic of the gimmick and the thing with Theory there. So I got to give it an A minus, and I agree with you. And look, some people go, well, isn't she just like, isn't Liv Morgan just like Enzo? No, Enzo could sell a fight.
Right. Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. No, there's no comparison, because Liv Morgan on the microphone is not only not good, she's actively bad. And by actively bad, I mean, and she can't help it. I mean, your voice is your voice, and the way your mannerism is your mannerism.
But she always sounds like this.
She sounds like a whiny brat constantly, and that's annoying. It's almost like a heel thing where it's like nails on a blackboard.
I'm going to win the belt, and I'm so happy.
And it's like, Jesus Christ, you're supposed to be a face. Could you cut the whining? Maybe that's just her normal voice. I don't know. But I'm not as enamored with Liv Morgan as the rest of the world is. She's a very pretty girl, and I'm sure she has a great future, but I think you pushed her fast. I think, you know, look what you did with Nikki Ash. She was the champion, too, and where is she now? I don't want to see that happen to Liv Morgan, because I do think a couple years down the road, Liv Morgan could be really, really good. She's certainly trying hard. She's just got to correct some minor mistakes and learn from some experience. I don't know if that's the person you put the belt on. Now, I know I hear people saying, what about Theory? Theory's already there, folks. You comparing Liv Morgan to Theory, there's not even any comparison at all. None, zero. So, I mean, I got to be happy for her, but at the same time, if she's just a transitional champion and that this wrecks her career and next thing you know she's joining Nikki Ash at catering, don't say I didn't warn you. Don't say I didn't say this is wrong, because I don't think she's ready for it and she's going to flop. Fans can be mean that way. They loved Nikki Ash, too, when she first came out. And then all of a sudden it was like, screw her. Right? But it was a good pay-per-view overall. Now, I guess some of the biggest news that happened is that Logan Paul signed a WWE contract. And people are mocking it, saying, oh, while Tony Khan signing wrestlers, Vince McMahon is signing Logan Paul. Well, keep laughing. See, because this is exactly the mentality that's killing professional wrestling. While there are guys right now busting their ass in the professional wrestling business saying, let me learn my 121st move, because I'm sure that 121st move will come in handy when I'm wrestling for 300 people in a gymnasium, and they'll really pop for me. Or if they don't, at least the boys in the back will be like, oh boy, you learned a new move. That's pretty cool. Logan Paul knows four, and he's going to make more money than you, and he's going to be in front of more people than you'll ever see in your life. That, you know why? Because he's got personality. That's why. Because he can get the crowd to care about him one way or the other. Whether they hate him or they love him, it doesn't matter. They don't ignore him. And while you're working on your moves, he's working on his chops of how I sell myself. How do I get people attention? And that's really all that's needed in professional wrestling. Now, Logan Paul, had he went out there at WrestleMania and shit the bed, the WWE wouldn't have signed him, no. But he didn't do that, though. Logan Paul went out there and proved he's an athlete. Is he a great professional wrestler? Is he freaking Dean Malenko? Is he Chris Benoit? No, he's not. He doesn't need to be. He's athletic, and he's athletically inclined, so he's going to pick things up quicker. And he just gets the fact that you have to be larger than life. You have to be someone who people care about one way or the other. You could be a super, super athlete and a fantastic professional wrestler, and you could be the man of 1,000 holds, like Dean Malenko. How far did he go? not a household name. Because he forgot the most important element. You got to have a personality. So you go ahead and keep signing these guys from Japan who nobody can pronounce their name or knows. And they'll come in and do their 100 moves. And people say, aren't they great? And people will forget about them the next day and say, oh, yeah, it was that Japanese guy whose name I can't pronounce. Logan Paul will be in here tearing it up because he's got the personality. And he understands that's one of the more important things in professional wrestling. So, Mike, they can laugh all they want. This is probably a really good move on the part of the WWE.
Absolutely. And think about it this way. I mean, think about what we sort of talked about earlier with Enzo. Enzo, you can laugh about, well, when him and Big Cass were on their run in the WWE, all he was there for was a hot tag, right? I mean,
yeah.
Maybe it's the truth, maybe it's not the truth. But think about it. You are always looking forward to whomever Enzo and Cass fought, and why was that?
Because they talked
why
a good fight.
That's right. That's right. And think about it. You know, they talked a good fight. And who was originally there? I believe, was it Carmella? Was it Alexa Bliss was their manager at
it
one point?
Carmella.
No,
Alexa Carmella.
Bliss was Buddy Murphy. Carmella.
Yeah, it was
so,
Carmella.
Yeah, so you had three people in that group that could talk a good fight. I mean, they haven't been using Carmella that way, but Carmella's decent on the microphone. She'd have been a better choice than Liv Morgan because at least she's decent. She can perform in the ring and she's decent on the mic, right?
Yeah, and I got news for you. When Carmella was coming out with them, she fit that whole motif so well. It was probably better than when she came to the main roster as the Princess of Staten Island because she's like, yeah, that worked for her. But when she was with Enzo and Cass, she had that edge to her. She had the edge to her of, well, this is a girl. She's not dainty, and she's not, oh, I might break a nail. And she's not like, oh, every day, you know, don't even touch me or I bruise. No, she was like, again, I said, I've known girls like this, where it's like, well, I can get guys to do whatever I want for me, but at the same time, I'm a little bit tomboyish, and I'll fight you. You know, I just happen to grow up really hot, despite the fact I'm a little bit tomboyish, and I don't mind getting my head, you know, nails dirty, and I don't mind getting into a brawl. She was that type of a girl when she was with them. Then they changed her a little bit to, you know, I'm a delicate flower. And that's where she's at now. She was great with them. She was great with them. But this is exactly what Logan Paul's going to be now. I said on the other show, and I will say it again, I totally disagree with Logan Paul being a face because most people don't like him. He's an annoying dude. He's just an annoying dude because he's 90% of the time he's trash talking. He's like one of these guys that's like, he talks shit and then you say, you can't back that up. And then he goes out there and backs it up and you're mad and say, well, you won't back it up next time. And that's how he's making a living. I'm trash talking all these people. I could kick your ass. I could kick their ass. They're not good. They're not a legend. They're blah, 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 blah. That's the guy you want to hate, not the guy you want to root for. I think they made a mistake there, and I think Logan Paul made a mistake when he insisted he wants to be a face in his contract. I think it's going to hurt him. But I think he's going to learn fast. He's going to have this feud with The Miz, and I have a feeling The Miz just keeps insisting, I don't care what Logan Paul says, eventually we're going to be tag team, and eventually we're going to be champions. I got a feeling that might happen. I got a feeling that him and Logan Paul might engage in a short feud, and then Logan Paul says, The Miz was right. You know, he taught me a lesson at WrestleMania, and I should have took the lesson, but instead I listened to all you idiots. And I came back here and fought him because I thought that's what I should do for all you idiots. And in reality, The Miz was always my friend, and you idiots just wanted to see The Miz get beat up. That would work. I think Logan Paul will find out quickly it's better off for him if he's a heel. And I think the WWE will find that out quickly, too. And they'll put some pressure on him and say, you know, come on. We know you have a podcast. You can't be, you know, hated. But look, do you think that hurts The Miz? He's got the number one show. Other than wrestling on USA Network. And he's a heel. It's not hurting him. So how would it hurt you? And I think probably, you know, with The Miz talking to him and stuff, I think Logan Paul will eventually get to the heel thing, which is good because that's what he's best at. But Mike, even if he doesn't, he still gets it, and that's, you know, 90% of the battle.
Right. He is much like Pat McAfee. All right? Now, a little bit different because Pat McAfee is a guy that the fans actually like him, and he plays, he's that guy. He doesn't have that whiny voice. He doesn't brag. He doesn't talk a lot. He doesn't challenge people. I mean, he has this kind of so-called feud with Baron Corbin, but that's because Baron Corbin instigates it, right? You know?
Right.
So, I mean, what do you expect a guy to do if another guy, you're trying to do your job and another guy comes and gets in your face and pushes you around and instigates things? What do you expect Pat McAfee to do? Yeah, he's not going to be a guy that's going to, he's a good athlete and all that stuff, being an ex-punter, but at some point that there is going to be a match between him and Baron Corbin. You know that's coming, right? You know that's coming.
McAfee is a good athlete, but the thing is, you can only do that so much. You can only have guys irritate you behind the announcing desk, and then you take a match with them. Twice is too much, to be honest. Twice in the length of time that it happened is too much. They better not do it a third time. They better not do it a third time. McAfee's better right where he is. If he really doesn't want to be there and he really does want to give himself a shot at being a professional wrestler, that's fine. But then go away from the announce desk, because the announcer should never be tougher than the wrestlers. It shouldn't work that way. Not unless you've been in the business. It's one thing if you say, well, I'm 40 and I stepped away from the business and I was a champion 10 times. Well, okay. Well, then you might be able to come out behind the desk and whoop somebody's ass. But if you're a punter, yeah, you shouldn't be able to do that. So, yeah. They can pull that once or twice. I don't think I want to see it anymore unless McAfee commits to being an actual professional wrestler. On the other hand, wait till you see Logan Paul with a microphone. And I think that if they let him be himself and they don't write too many lines for him, just let him kind of schmooze himself, you'll either come to really hate him and want to see him get his ass beat, which I think is the best option, or maybe he can endear himself to this crowd. He has the talent. We'll see. He's got the talent that counts, and he's athletic. So for the little bit of greenness that he's going to have, he's not going to know a million moves. He's not going to be super fluid in the ring right away. He'll make up for it, and he'll learn quick. He'll learn quick. Now, I know a lot of people missed Saturday's show, and they wanted me to talk about this Max Dupri thing. So let me say this. I am very, very happy that both Mace and Mansoor have a role now that they're probably going to be featured players. Good for them. They were being wasted, totally wasted. When's the last time you saw Mace? When's the last time you saw Mansoor? They were being totally wasted. Having said that, I don't like this. And the reason I don't like it is because I don't see him getting over with. I really thought when they kept stalling the Max Dupri thing, they were going to bring in two guys that totally, 100% couldn't possibly be male models if their life depended on it. I thought they were going to bring in, you know, some 350-pound fat guy and some thin. I thought they were going to bring in like a guy like Otis and a guy like James Ellsworth. And the gimmick was going to be, you're not allowed to say why they can't be male models, because if you do that, you're body shaming them, and that's politically incorrect. because then it would be very, very annoying when Max Dupree got in your face and say, well, you know, when somebody says, these guys are male models? Yes, they're the best of the in their field. Yeah, but what? Yeah, but what? What are you trying to say? And, of course, you can't say it. What are you going to say? He's a big, fat, dumpy-looking guy. He couldn't be a model, and he's a thin, little, ugly dude. There's no way he can be a model. You can't say it in today's world, right? So then Max Dupree could be an annoying guy who says, in my world, these are the top of the top male models, and you don't get to say different. Otherwise, you're body-shaming them or looks-shaming them. And it would be hilarious if it was like Pat McAfee kept trying to, you know, let the cat out of the bag and say, are you kidding me? Take a look. Don't say it, Pat. Don't say it. You're not allowed to say it. Yeah, but that guy. No, Pat. Pat. Yeah, but look at him. No, Pat. It would be very funny. I really thought that's where they were going with that gimmick. Instead, they introduced two guys who, you know, clean up well, could, I guess, be male models. And I don't know where the fun is in this. Exactly. And I don't even know where the heat is. Like, where's the heat? Did Max Dupree say anything that's wrong? Okay, he's got them dressed up nice. They look like they could be in a catalog for men's suits or men's outerwear. Where's the heat? Not sure where the heat is there. See, the heat, in my theory, is they're obviously not male models. There's a fat, balding guy, you know, and a little jerky-looking guy. They're not male models. But you can't say it, because in today's world, that would be politically incorrect. That's where the heat comes from. In this angle, I don't know where the heat comes from. Okay, so they're two good-looking guys who dress up well. Okay, and the heat is where? So I'm torn, Mike, because I'm glad they have something to do, but I don't see this working out.
Right. Look, even with a guy like a Tyler Breeze, right, who that was basically his gimmick, he wasn't that cut, he wasn't that big, but you bought him in that gimmick, right? You know, you bought him in that gimmick. Whereas you're right. Somebody that looks like as thin like Adam Cole, right? No muscle tone, no nothing. You know, he may have a good-looking face, but there's no muscle tone. He doesn't look athletic. He don't look like he can sell, you know, swimsuits or whatever, you know, underwear or whatever, you know. He's not Marky Mark, right? That type of
thing. Yeah, you know what? You know, the problem is Adam Cole's too good-looking, so he'd probably dress up well, too. If you could have, I know they don't want James Ellsworth because of his problems, but can you imagine if that one of them was James Ellsworth? Can you imagine the fun you would have with that? And who was that other guy that was from Australia? He's now calling himself Jonas something, but he didn't, what did he call himself? He was a TNA TV champion for a while. He was a big, heavy-looking guy. I mean, he wasn't an ugly guy, but he was obviously not a model. He was a big, heavy, heavy guy. If you had that, it would be so much fun. I think fans would actually start rooting for him because they'd be like, well, that's very funny. That is a very funny gimmick that Max Dupree has found two guys who couldn't be male models if their life depended on it. No one can say anything because they don't want to be politically incorrect or insult anyone because, God forbid, in today's world you insult someone. So everyone has to just pretend that the elephant isn't in the room and, oh, okay, I guess these guys are male models, when everyone knows that's not true. That would be a great gimmick. Great gimmick. You can't tell me you couldn't find two guys to do that gimmick, but instead they went with Mace. And by the way, what was wrong with Mace? Out of all of Retribution, T-Bar never should have been that character. It should have just been Dominik Dijakovic, and that's good enough. Slapjack, just let him be who he was, and that's good enough. But Mace worked, in my opinion. I liked the look. I liked the outfit. I liked it all. And I said, whoa, okay, if you made this guy like a really savage, hard-to-beat guy, like a Veer Mahan-type guy, yeah, I could see people taking him seriously. But you didn't. you ruined him. And now you're trying to repackage him as a male model, and you're not even changing his name. Now it's just Maurice or whatever the hell it is. You can't even pronounce their names. That's not going to fly because you can't even pronounce their names. They should have had ridiculous names that you said, well, that's obvious. Not the guy's name. You know, Francois and whatever. So you're just like, yeah, whatever. Please. Instead, I don't know, and I don't see where Eli Drake's going to be funny in this. And that's his main thing, is he's great on the mic and he's funny. And there's nothing funny about this. So I don't know where the fun is going to come from. I don't know where the heat's going to come from, and I don't know where the fun is going to come from. So I'm worried about this angle. Now, maybe they'll improve it. Maybe they can find a way to improve it. But I don't think so. I don't think so. And I think my idea is a lot better. Now, what would you have done with those two guys? I don't know. So I am happy for them. They do get a feature part now in the WWE, but I don't think it's going to be long-lived. I just don't. As far as the rest of that SmackDown, folks, like I said, holy God, you couldn't get any worse of a SmackDown. This SmackDown was an abject disaster. When you have to go so far as a company as to bring the Viking Raiders back as heels and then add to their name the new vicious Viking Raiders, like they're a friggin' cereal brand, new and improved cornflakes. Are you kidding? Embarrassingly bad. Just let their actions show that they are vicious now. You see, everything that you could show and let the audience figure out for themselves, you're too lazy to, so you just say it. Oh, I heard Montez Ford and Dawkins are having problems. Well, you never showed us anything like that. So why would we believe that? You've never showed us one time them guys having problems. You just said it. And now you're saying, oh, the Viking Raiders, new and vicious Viking Raiders. Well, show us. Don't say it. Show us. Wouldn't it have been better to bring the Viking Raiders out as if perhaps they were going to reunite with the New Day and be friends like they were and then have them beat them unmercifully? Grab the microphone and say some shit themselves? So people knew they were serious, let them get heat. Let them grab the microphone and say, you know, we're done with the circus act. We're done trying to be a comedy routine. We're done trying to let the fans shape who we are and the Federation shape who we are. We're two of the meanest, toughest, most savage wrestlers of all time, and we got caught up in this nonsense, and we don't have any friends backstage. And our only goal here is to beat whoever you put us into the ring with until they can't wrestle anymore. Win the gold and go home. Let these guys get the heat themselves. Don't have the announcer say, remember, they're new and vicious. These aren't those Viking Raiders that were playing basketball with the Street Profits. These are vicious. They're vicious, I tell you. Don't tell me. Show me. Down they put on the New Day wasn't good enough. Should have the New Day out on a stretcher. Literally out on a stretcher. So people would have said, well, damn, the hell? What the hell's the situation? Do whatever you have to do to show they're vicious. Don't just say, oh, Pat, in passing, say, oh, they're new and vicious. Or whoever it happens to be, new and vicious. Mike, that was really embarrassing.
That was really embarrassing, and that's the thing. I mean, look, I mean, we know how good they were with, as in ROH, right? We know that they were really, really decent in NXT when they were down there, you know? They have, I mean, we've said it before, I don't know if they can come back from being basically the Bushwhackers, you know? Because remember what the Bushwhackers were before they went to the WWE.
Right, yeah. The sheep herders.
They were the sheep herders. This badass cup team that you didn't want to mess with. They hurt you just as soon as they looked at you, right? And then they go to the WWE and they were licking each other's head and, you know, putting people's faces in armpits and all kinds of things, you know. Basically, they were three stooges without the third stooge, right?
Yep.
So, and that's what they basically turned, you know, that's what they basically turned the thing into, the Viking Raiders. Yeah.
Well, and again, they never treated them good to begin with. First, they were the Viking Experience. That was embarrassing. You're the Viking Experience. That doesn't make any sense. Then they went back to the Viking Raiders, and they were comedy act, and now they're the new Vicious Viking Raiders. If they keep saying the new Vicious Viking Raiders, you may as well just go home, because I'm telling you right now, it's not going to go over. Fans are going to laugh at you. And as far as those shields, beating them down with those shields, you didn't do a good enough job. Now, I know that the WWE probably said, you know, be careful, obviously, but you got to whale them. I mean, if I'm the New Day in that position, I'm telling the Viking Raiders, you really got to give me a couple of good shots with this. I don't break my friggin' ribs or give me a concussion, but don't pitter-pat me either, because this is your big chance, and I don't want to look like an idiot either. You got to beat the hell out of us with this, you know, to make this look good. No, they pitter-patted them. They didn't do anything devastating. I mean, you got to plan something for the Viking Raiders to do that you're like, well, that was totally uncalled for, and that's freaking ridiculous. Because then people might buy it. Thing you with their shields didn't do it. Something else had to happen then. Do something in the ring, whatever it happens to be, that looks like, well, you've just absolutely tried to end somebody's career. Give somebody a 3 or 4 week vacation. That's what you got to do. And as far as the Viking Raiders being, you know, put up as real mean and hard to beat, if you could do that, you could have done it off Drew McIntyre if you had him and Sheamus as a tag team. Can you imagine if they did take Drew McIntyre's sword and destroy it? Weren't they big friends with him because he had the sword? He was a warrior and they were a warrior. He has nobody to turn to. He's trying to fight him by himself. He can't. And Sheamus finally says, I'll do it. You know, we fought I don't know how long with each other and we never saw eye to eye, but I don't want to see this happen to you either. It's different when we fight. Be a hell of a fight. Be a great thing you could build up. Certainly a lot better than what you got Sheamus doing now. Well, the Viking Raiders will not be taken serious. Then you have the ultimate embarrassment where you say, well, we're having a battle royal for no reason. We have an open spot in Money in the Bank that could be filled with a battle royal, but we're not going to do that. We're just going to have a battle royal for no reason, and later on in the card we'll have a match to determine who's going to go in. I don't know what the hell you're doing. Honest to God, I don't know what the hell you're doing. It was bad. This whole SmackDown was really, really bad. It's unusual because SmackDown's usually a little bit better. Disaster, start to finish. They are very fortunate that Money in the Bank turned out as good as it did because they didn't do much to build it on SmackDown. They sure as hell didn't do much to build it on Raw, really. They're busy with Pat McAfee going against Baron Corbin. That's not happening at this pay-per-view. So why are you busy giving it time? I don't understand that. Some other things that's not happening. Now, I'm going to tell you that as far as Austin Theory goes with this briefcase as well, do not put it out of the realm of possibility he doesn't hang on to the briefcase. Do not put it out of the realm of possibility that it does not get to somebody else's hands. I think they are going to do the right thing with Theory. Everyone's saying SummerSlam is going to cash it in. I don't know. I got this weird feeling that they're going to really string this along with him. Maybe the whole year or close to it, so that he's always center of attention he could be champion at any time. You never know what's going to happen. And maybe he doesn't even keep it because maybe they'll stall until, you know, Cody Rhodes comes back or something, wins it from him somehow. There's a lot they could do with this. There's a lot of branches on the tree with theory. I'm just telling you that as a wrestling observer and a journalist, I have seen a lot of guys who I thought, yeah, they have potential. They've got good potential. And I've seen some of them live up to that potential. I've seen some of them crash and burn. I have not seen a guy, I don't think in a really long time, that I think really can't crash and burn. And I think Theory can't crash and burn. I just think he's almost a guaranteed sure thing. Because he's just too talented and he gets it. And there's no way you can keep that down for long. He's one of those guys, I think, that if tomorrow you said, okay, change of plan. You're coming out and you're going to be a prospector looking for gold and digging for gold and you're a good guy, he'd be like, okay, I can do that. And probably could do it. I don't think you can mess him up. I'm not sure how you could mess him up because he's just too good at what he does. He's a little bit, in a way, as far as the psychology, like a Damian Sandow. He's a much better wrestler than Damian Sandow, but he's one of those guys that I think you could give crap and he still manages to make it look okay. So I think he's a guaranteed shoe-in. I don't necessarily think he needs the Money in the Bank briefcase nor the title right now, but I'm glad he has it because I think he's going to be the center of attention for a while, Mike, and I think that was kind of probably the plan.
And now speaking of Damian Sandow and Rex, look at what the NWA is doing with him. They're making him a manager.
Yep.
You know, so
yep.
I'm not saying that it's going to happen that soon for Theory, but this is a guy that presents well, that can talk. He is John Cena.
He can't be the next Cena.
You know, and that's the thing. I mean, there's going to come a time when he's going to flip. And people are going to flip for him when he's a face, you know? I mean,
yep.
They're going to have to get rid of him with the telephone and the selfies and this and that. But, again, he's going to flip, and it's going to be big. And, frankly, he'll probably end up flipping on Vince, you know? That's
what I think is going to happen. I think Vince is somehow going to lose – interest in Theory, and he's going to find somebody else. This is my new next big thing. And he's going to be somebody so unlikable and so mean and vicious and nasty that he makes Theory look halfway decent. And fans are going to say, I feel sorry for Theory, because Theory genuinely thought Vince McMahon was like his dad. Theory genuinely thought Vince McMahon has taken an interest in me. And just like any wrestler in the world, if Vince McMahon took that interest in you and said, this is what you need to do and this is what you need to do, you're going to do it because you're so eager for that success. And now all of a sudden Vince McMahon just says, get out of my sight. You're a disappointment. You're not what I thought you were. This is the guy. This is the guy I thought you were. Fans are going to take Theory's side. Absolutely 100% going to take Theory's side. And if Theory didn't go leaps and bounds last night, fighting Bobby Lashley into showing he can get in that ring with virtually anybody and do a good match, I don't know what to tell you. Because I've always been sort of on Bobby Lashley. Yeah, he's a power wrestler. He's fun to watch sometimes. Short matches, nothing major. Last night was a really good match. And a lot of that was Theory just supplying the motion, Mike, and letting, Bobby Lashley do what he does best.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. I mean, think about this. You've got at some point, you're going to see Theory versus Omos, all right? Probably when Theory, Omos, they're going to want Omos as a heel for a while. And probably within the next, 4 to 6 months, I would say maybe a little bit more, is when you're going to see that whole thing with Vince losing interest in Theory, and Theory's questioning Vince about him losing the interest and all that stuff. That's when about six months from now. That's about when you're going to see that happen, right? So you know, and that's about WrestleMania time, right? 6 to 8 months, right? WrestleMania
yeah.
time, right? So
yeah, that's a good point. It could happen as early as that, but then again, I mean, we'll see. All I know is this: by having Theory take that Money in the Bank briefcase, he's going to be front and center a lot. And I think that's the plan, is to keep him front and center. Good for Vince if that's what they want to do with him. I 100% agree with this. I 100% agree. I think he really needs to push this guy because I think he is somebody that could lead the WWE into the next generation. I'm not saying he's the next John Cena. I don't know. How many people are a John Cena? How many people are going to be that famous and that popular? Not many. But he definitely can be like the next Seth Rollins or people like that. That's very, very, very crucial to your federation. You know, being the next Steve Austin or John Cena, Seth Rollins isn't even there yet. I'd argue Roman Reigns might not even be there yet, really. So I don't know if he's going to be that. But he can be, and again, with his age, for how long? Barring any injuries, a long time. So that's actually a really, really good blue chipper that the WWE's acquired. So now let's see if they ruin them or they do it right. I'm betting this time they do it right. Now, I know a lot of people said, well, what did you think of the, Judgment Day is kind of dead now. Yeah, they are kind of dead now. This little segment we saw on Money in the Bank probably indicates that Edge is going to come back. Probably going to come back with a dark image, but a face. I guess he'll fight Finn Balor. Maybe he'll fight Finn Balor as the demon. First, he'll wipe out, obviously, he'll wipe out Damian Priest. It'll eventually come to Finn Balor. I told you that the Judgment Day's done. As soon as Edge left, I said, this is not going to work. And now you have the worst possible timing with Rhea Ripley getting injured. And now they're just down to two dudes. One who never wrestles, Damien Priest, and Finn Balor, who's not really good on the mic, and people don't really give one damn about as a heel, Mike. So I don't know where the Judgment Day's going. Not far, I don't think.
I don't think so either. And I mean, look, we can make fun of Liv Morgan about bad matches and bad on the mic and stuff, but at least when her group broke up, she went upward. Right?
Good point. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, that's a great point because, again, so now we have a champion who has beaten Ronda Rousey when Rousey's knee supposedly needed medical attention, but she got her ass whipped on a regular basis by Rhea Ripley. Massacred by Rhea Ripley. With the announcer saying, Liv Morgan's good, but she's not going to – Rhea Ripley's way too much for her. And then have proving it. And this is now your champion. That's my point exactly, Mike. You've made my point for me. That's why I'm not for Liv Morgan. If you had Liv Morgan not lose matches, then I would have said, well, the way you're promoting Liv Morgan, yeah, her being the champion makes sense. Nobody's beating her. So whether I think she's a good wrestler or not, the moot point, you're pushing her. So the next logical step is she's a winner. But no. All she does is lose. And sometimes when she wins, her matches are bad. That's not somebody you reward with a belt. I'm sorry. I get it, though, because she's popular. So, I mean, I guess you got to give the fans what they want once in a while. There was a huge pop for her, so. It is what it is. I personally will not have pulled the trigger on that. And, yeah, we had somebody ask him, I'm going to mention the Alexa Bliss embarrassing thing with the WWE credit card. Yeah, that was really, really, really bad. Really bad. That comes close to being the new Vicious Viking Raiders bad. Because now what you're basically telling is you've taken the Lily doll from basically being a possessed evil doll who has somehow captured Alexa Bliss's persona into something dark and evil. She's now just a little mischief maker who is ordering presents for Alexa Bliss with a credit card. I know they want to keep that Lily doll front and center because they're selling them. But you were only selling them because of what the Lily doll was. Nobody says, oh, let me get that cute little Lily doll who does dumb things like order roller skates for Alexa Bliss in a doll size. That's not what they want. The people who are ordering the Lily doll is the same reason you were ordering, like, the Annabelle, you know? Like, horror film collectors are like, oh, I want to have an Annabelle doll or an Exorcist doll because it's cool and it represents something dark and evil and horrific, not because it's a little rascal who orders stuff on your credit card. A terrible job. And her having to talk to Lily and act as though Lily is really alive and can do something like ordering from a credit card, when she's no longer that character, really just muddles shit up. And I don't know. They have mishandled Alexa Bliss to the point where I don't know if she can come back from it. I mean, I know what they're going to do. They're going to throw their hands up in about a month or two and say, go back to the old Alexa Bliss. Because this isn't working. No, it's not working. You're right. Mike, I saw that credit card commercial, and I said, well, there goes everything down the drain. I mean, you might as well have had, like, Bray Wyatt do it. You know, be rocking the rocking chair, saying all these things about the devil. And by the way, when I want to order supplies for my shack, I use his credit card. I couldn't believe it. I just think it's so embarrassing and bad.
That would have been like having the what's her name, puppet, ordering off of a credit card, Sister Abigail puppet, ordering off the credit card, right? I mean, how would that have made Bray Wyatt look? You know, how would that made him, you know, Puskas Hog, you know, all these puppets that they actually gave personalities to, right? I mean, they did some excellent writing for those puppets. And to have one of those puppets order something with a credit card. Now, yeah, you would have bought an animated, trombone ordering with a credit card with a New Day. But that's a common... That basically, yeah, they're a serious team, but the New Day is basically a comedy gimmick, right?
Well, I mean, even if, like, when Al Snow had the head, if he said that to the head, it'd be like, yeah, whatever. We get it. It's funny. It's. But, no, this is supposed to be a serious thing. And, by the way, you've dropped this whole thing about her psychiatrist. You should have kept that up. See, I think you had a good thing going there. You should have had Alexa Bliss have to make regular visits to where the psychiatrist saying, how's it going? Very well. You know, I feel like my old self. I feel good. And eventually have him say, the time has come. And she's like, the time has come for what? Time's come to get rid of the doll. I kept her with you because I wanted to wean you off slowly, but you seem to be your old self. You seem to be fine now. And I think keeping that doll around is just a memory that's not going to serve you well. So you have to have the strength to get rid of her. And she said, I can't get rid of her. This is like my best friend growing up. I can't. Yes, you can. This is the final step. And if you had Alexa Bliss finally say, I'm sorry, Lily, but this is my final step to being who I am. I have to prove to the world I'm back to being, you know, the old Alexa Bliss. And put that doll in the garbage can and then have somebody take it out without seeing who took it out, you know something's coming. I would have suggested that it be Nikki Cross. And the next time you see Nikki Cross, she acts a lot more like the old Alexa Bliss. And her gimmick is, you betrayed me. I gave you everything, and you threw me away. That would be a damn strong gimmick, that Alexa Bliss, in an attempt to totally cure herself, rid herself of the Lily doll. Obviously, Nikki Cross picks it up and becomes possessed by it, and now the doll wants revenge on Alexa Bliss for throwing her away. You could have got some good mileage out of that, Mike.
Right, and here's the thing with that doll. After that, after the Nikki Cross thing goes away, it runs its course. I mean, you could. I don't want to say indefinitely, but there are other wrestlers that you could have done this with this doll. You know.
Yeah. Well, again, branches on the tree. You could say, well, whoever really seems to come in contact with this damn doll, it changes them tremendously. And you could have had it be various people and maybe eventually end up back in the hands of Alexa Bliss, where she could say she's home where she belongs. I never should have listened to any of you. Would have been awesome. I mean, at least it's something, and you keep selling that doll, by the way. You just keep selling that merchandise. But no, now they're having to do credit card commercials. So, yeah, that was truly horrible. And that's counterproductive, self-destructive, you name it. That's what it is. And that's the WWE for you, gang. They'll do that shit. And it's a shame. Rather than to just think things out, they're just impulsively saying, eh, it's no big deal anymore. We got to make Lily more lighthearted and you know, fun. All of a sudden, she's a fun little rascal. She's not evil. No, she's supposed to be evil. And I'm sure she wouldn't like the way Alexa Bliss is acting now, because that's not the way she wanted her to be. So we're not addressing that at all. Remember when Alexa Bliss used to say, well, don't make Lily mad, because then bad things happen. Well, we haven't seen anything bad happen. Is Lily mad that, you know, she was beaten by Liv Morgan? Is Lily mad that she didn't win the ladder match? At what point are we going to see Lily mad again? You know, it doesn't make sense. None of that makes sense. So that was a horrible spot. Absolutely horrible spot. I will say this, though, if you're the WWE and you shot that vignette for Edge, 30 seconds, it's circulating all over the internet. Could it be Bray Wyatt? Well, it's not Bray Wyatt. It's Edge, and we know it's Edge. But what does that tell you, WWE? Because if I put that vignette out and immediately the whole internet's abuzz is, oh, boy, Bray Wyatt's back, it's time to reach in your wallet and pay the man what he wants and bring him back. Because quite obviously people want him back. Remember the Vince McMahon who once said, I brought the Ultimate Warrior back despite what he did to me, which is basically blackmail me, because the fans wanted it. And you have to give the fans what they want. Well, the fans want him back. And if you want any proof that that's true, just take a look at social media after you shot that vignette. The people who did not watch it closely thought it was Bray Wyatt because of the way it was shot, and they were all psyched up. Got to bring him back. You could even work something out with him and Alexa Bliss again, because, you know, Alexa may not remember all this, what happened. Maybe she falls right back in with him. Maybe he's the one who turns her back. There's so much you could do with it, Mike, and this is proof positive that the fans want him.
The fans want him, and they want him bad. I mean, every time he has his YouTube channel, and he puts out these videos, and, I mean, you go and look at the amount of people that have watched those videos that he put on YouTube, I'm coming back and all this stuff. I mean, it's not an insignificant amount, right?
No, it's not.
You look at the amount of people that go to his Twitter feed. Not an insignificant amount. You know, he still has a lot of fans, and that should tell the WWE something, that he's not looking to sign. He's set his price so high that basically you're the only people that are going to pay his price and nobody else. Not even Tony Khan. That should tell
WWE
something.
I don't know exactly what his price is, but all I've heard is that his price is so high that even Tony Khan isn't really too thrilled about it. So it's got to be quite high. It's got to be quite high. But the WWE certainly can afford it. And they'll make that much money on his merchandise first 6 months. Whatever you're going to give him in a three-year contract, let's say you do 3 years, whatever you give him in a three-year contract, you will make in merchandise in the first year, if not sooner. So he's basically going to be working for you for free. That's how much of a merchandise mover he was and always has been. And he's very good at coming up with new ways to market things, to say, well, now we can market this, now we can market that. Yeah. And trying to turn Edge into him ain't going to work, and trying to turn somebody else into him ain't going to work, and trying to make the Judgment Day the Wyatt family is not going to work, because it's him. It's not the gimmick, it's him. That's the difference. We'll see. We'll see what happens. If all I'm saying is, if I'm the WWE and that trends instantly the minute I show a clip, I say to myself, well, the fans were bluffed and they were wrong. But, man, did you see how many fans were so psyched when they thought it was him? Maybe we better reconsider this. Couldn't hurt. Absolutely couldn't hurt. Speaking of things that can't hurt, people are asking me, well, when are they going to bring back Bayley? And what is the deal with Sasha Banks and Naomi? Well, here's the latest on Sasha Banks. If you go on the WWE website, she's still there. She's still there. I warned everybody who was writing me saying, Sasha's gone. Are you going to announce she's gone? I said, I've heard from sources she's not gone. And as far as I know, she's not gone. Now, I have said I don't think you're going to see her in the WWE anymore, and I'm pretty sure that might be the case unless they throw huge amounts of money at her. I know she's not happy, but she's done this before. And I know the WWE is trying to work something out, because if they weren't trying to work something out, they would have already removed her from that website. Totally removed. There are people they remove instantaneously. They did not remove Sasha Banks. Think it's a good idea? No, I think it's a horrible idea. You do not reward bad behavior. You might want to give Naomi a second chance. I wouldn't give Sasha Banks a fourth, or however many this is. Speaking of chances, I'm very, very disappointed to tell you that Jeff Hardy pled not guilty to drunk driving charges. This despite the fact that they have his blood alcohol level on paper. But they admitted to it. Now, there are legal reasons why you try to plead not guilty, even though you may be. Reduced sentences, different things. But the bottom line of the situation is, if you were really recalcitrant, if you were really remorseful for what you did, you walk up to the judge and you say, yes, I did. I have a sickness. I've been to rehab several times. It hasn't worked. I need to go desperately go to another one. I am doing it. And I'd ask you to be, you know, lenient with me. I admit what I did, and I know the severity of what I did. To walk up there and say, yeah, we know we have the alcohol level. Yeah, we know we have the sworn testimony of the police officer. Basically, that just says, yeah, that's screw you. We don't care. That's a horrible decision. I know there's legal reasons for it. It's still a horrible decision. And it's one that's going to come back to haunt him, because a lot of his fans are now saying, okay, well, now I've lost respect for him. At least own up to your mistakes. Oh, he is owning up to his mistakes. He's going to rehab. Yeah, he's pleading not guilty in court. Why are you going to rehab if you ain't guilty? He got all over Tammy Sitch when she pled not guilty, right? Well, how can she plead not guilty? They took her blood alcohol level. She caused a crash that killed somebody. And now she has the nerve to, they should strip her of her WWE Hall of Fame ring. But everybody's willing to give Jeff Hardy another chance yet. I don't get that. So Mike, yeah, I was shocked to hear that he pled not guilty. Again, there are some legal reasons why you might do that. But just from a level of trying to show that you are upset about what happened and you do have remorse, you really probably shouldn't do that.
Right. And that's a – we've said how much of a misnomer the Tammy Sitch thing is, because everything she did to – earn that ring, she did before all this stuff happened, right?
Right. Yeah.
Right. So her ring is well deserved and well earned. Yeah. She may have, at one point she may have wanted to try to sell it or whatever, this, that, and the other, which is a bad idea. But everything she did, she earned that ring. She did before all her problems started. I mean, we can go back into whatever started her spiraling downward, right? Whatever it is, I seem to think it was when Chris Candido passed on. But that's neither here nor there.
Yep.
You know, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. He's not yet in the WWE Hall of Fame, is he, Jeff Hardy?
No, he's not.
And
he may not get there now.
And he may not get there now. Now, his brother will probably end up getting there at some point. His brother, Matt.
Yeah, I heard his brother said if they don't go in as a team, he doesn't want to go. So we'll find out. But your point is well taken. And I've always said, and I know people think I'm wrong, and I understand why you think I'm wrong, but regardless of what you do, no matter how horrible it is, we can all agree that's a horrible thing. If Chris Benoit really did what he's accused of, I've got my doubts about it. I'm going to be honest with you. And I know people say conspiracy theory, but look into it a little more. But if he did, he's a horrible, terrible person who suffered from, you know, brain injuries and things and flipped. It does not change what he accomplished before he did it. You could be the world's – you could end up being a serial killer. And we can all agree you're a horrible, terrible, evil person. But if you set the track record back in 1977, then you still did it. And to say, well, no, he did. Well, yes, he did, though. Well, we don't want his name associated with it. Well, I get that, but he did it, though. You can't erase anyone's history because of their action. You can only say, you can put a little footnote and say, this son of a bitch did X, Y, and Z later. But he still did it, though. So, Mike, yeah, I'm totally against that. I don't think you should cancel anybody, regardless of how bad they did. If they set some kind of a record or they achieved something, it's one thing to say you're fired, you can't be a teacher if you're a pedophile, or you can't be a cop if you're in the mafia. I get that. But, like, let's say you set a record or you achieve something, you know, you win an Oscar or something. You can't just posthumously say, okay, well, then, you know, we're taking it back because 20 years later you did something horrible.
That's right, and that's the thing. I mean, look, you know, we know what happened with Hulk Hogan and all the comments and this, that, and the other, and what he did because his daughter was dating some – probably ne'er-do-well person or whatever, that he said what he said about that guy, and that got him in trouble, and there was other things that got him in trouble, but basically it was the so-called racist comment or whatever that got him in trouble and got basically him kicked out of the WWE and almost taken out of the Hall of Fame, even though this happened after he did all the stuff that would have gotten him into the Hall of Fame in the first place, right?
Right.
So I was against them. I was against the WWE doing what they did to Hulk Hogan because he did that recently at the time, because everything he did to get into the Hall of Fame, he did before this happened. Right.
Well, that's the thing. You know, the funny thing is you're a serial killer, right? You've killed 14 young women in horrible, terrible ways, and they're making bubblegum cards with you on it. I'm not kidding. You can buy serial killer cards. They're writing books, and people are like, I collect serial killer books. They're making documentaries on you. There are literally groups on social media, who's your favorite serial killer? But if a guy suffers some kind of brain injury, goes berserk and kills his family, he's not allowed to keep the achievements that he achieved. There are people who are putting up artwork that John Wayne Gacy did. Oh, he painted clowns. Yeah, he also killed young men and tortured them terribly. Oh, I got his painting. I consider it a collector's item. Okay, well, then if you can do that, then Chris Benoit can keep his titles. If you can do that, Tammy Sitch can keep her ring. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. So, yeah, I mean, but pleading not guilty shows me that Jeff Hardy truly thinks we're all idiots. And he's not sorry he did it. He's sorry he got caught. And I don't like that. Doesn't change anything that he achieved. And if the WWE doesn't want to put him in the Hall of Fame now, I understand, because he did this before they did it. But if he was in the Hall of Fame already, I would not be asking for them to take him out of the Hall of Fame. What difference does it make what he does now? It's what he did then. So I think it kind of depends on when these incidents take place. Anyway, folks, we should have a really, really solid Raw. Really solid. Based on this pay-per-view. And, you know, we should have actually a pretty solid SmackDown based on this pay-per-view. So what I want everybody to do is psych yourself up for Raw. Maybe we'll have a good one. Want you people, do not – I never get political on this show. I'm going to get political for 10 seconds. Do not be told by anyone, anywhere, anytime, ever, that you should not celebrate Independence Day. Do not fall for the – oh, this is a very bad tradition. This is based on racism. This is based on whatever. This is based on freedom. And there's many people who sacrifice their very lives so you can be that. So you go out and celebrate and you have a good time. And if somebody tells you you shouldn't, you tell them what they can do.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat.